Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome back, lacrosse fans, to the Inside Lacrosse Preps Podcast. I am Steven Berger here at the Inside Lacrosse Studios, back in action for week three. Super excited to be back in the studio today because I have a lot to talk about and I have a very important guest. And I'm super excited about our topics that we've hashed out for this week. But first, Lax fans, I do want to remind you, please subscribe, tune in every week. We are having four podcasts that Inside Lacrosse is running, covering integral pieces and facets of the game from Division One, the college ranks, to our Inside Lacrosse Women's Podcast. Recently launched yesterday, we put a Major League Lacrosse podcast, who's led by our one and only Kyle Devitt. And then, of course, the IL Preps podcast, focused specifically on high school, club lacrosse, the landscape of the game at the high school ranks, led by myself, Steven Berger. So if there are things that you want discussed on each of these podcasts, please hit us up on our social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know where to find us. With that all out of the way, I'd like to get to introduce our special guest, as I mentioned, for today's show. Now, I feel incredibly honored to be able to interview and catch up with this guy about the game. Now, I have a huge amount of respect for him, not only being my boss at one time, but also someone who I looked up to as a player in the MLL, now as a coach, someone who I've pretty much on speed dial to be able to pick his brain and talk lacrosse strategy, game management, or even just get a pump up speech for him pregame. So, a great friend, someone I've been fortunate enough to be close with over the past 5 years. Mr. Brian Silcott, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you, Berg. Thank you for a very nice introduction. I think the looking up thing is mutual. Love watching you play. Love working with you. I'm excited about this interview.
Yeah, man. So let's get to it first. You know, how are you? And you know, things going well. I definitely want to give a little rundown your resume, but you know, things doing well. I know you got a new little guy in your life. You're in a different part of the country than you've been in the past year. So how are things going for you, Bri?
Things are great. You mentioned the little guy, Cameron James Silcott, came in the world in July of 2013 and is well on his way, to making people forget who Paul Rabel and Gary Gate and Casey Powell all were. That's the key to my life right now.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm down in Florida, you know, running LD3 with Liam Banks. We've expanded down to Florida, so we're doing a lot of coaching down here. I also took a job, much like yourself, coaching a high school team, which you know is a ton of fun. Obviously a lot of challenges, but also a lot of fun having a high school team to coach. I'm coaching at the Bold School, which is a private school here in Jacksonville, working with LD3 and raising my son, and very, very happy in Jacksonville, Florida.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm here with Coach Silcott. And just to give our fans a background, a little bit of a bio, Coach Silcott is from Bedford, New York, went to Fox Lane High School. He was an all-state wrestler, football player, lacrosse player, and that truly led his, you know, opportunity to get an unbelievable education and to play lacrosse at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York. Was a national champion there, a national midfielder of the year, two-time All-American, and really didn't stop there. You know, running into the NLL ranks or what we used to know as the MIL, and also in the MLL, the professional ranks. You know, not only was Coach Silcott a player, but he also, you know, got himself involved into the, you know, presidency role, sort of general management roles, in both of those leagues, you know, being a part of the Portland Lumberjacks as an organization. He was a head coach of the San Francisco Dragons. So, you know, his involvement at the professional ranks wasn't just as a player, but he's also been, sort of on the behind the scenes realm of growing those, organizations and growing those, businesses. But, you know, coaching has really been something that he's sort of gravitated to. And I think, you know, from all the playing days really has led to him being a great coach. And, you know, from defensive coordinator at Nazareth College, to heading off to the head coach at Trinity. Again, being a head coach in the MLL, working with some of the top players in the game. Coach, you mentioned partner of the LB3 and really growing the LB3 ranks. And then most recently, your adventure as a head coach at the Bolas School in Jacksonville. Coach, a tremendous resume, right? And really, like I said, the playing days and leading into your coaching ranks and sort of everything you've learned. You know, first thing I got to ask you, you know, all that into one, you know, what's been so special to you about this sport? And, you know, as you're now in this new ranks down in Florida, how is coaching high school lacrosse in Florida? And how is the competition? How are things going with the game in that sunny state down there?
Florida is great for lacrosse. You know, we're producing more and more good players, which is obviously at one end of the spectrum. You know, the ability to take good athletes and mold them into great lacrosse players, is one side of it. And then the other side of it is just providing a huge platform for a whole bunch of kids, to experience, the game and then have an opportunity to play it in their lives, regardless of whether they ever become the next Division I or even Division III star. And I think both sides of that are going fairly well here in Florida. I think in particular the best players are getting better. I think that's the biggest boost that's going on here right now is that the good players are starting to get really, really good. And then more and more, talented, as we call, you know, football type athletes are starting to play lacrosse down here, which is huge. I think where we're a little bit lacking, at least from what I've seen here in North Florida, is the game isn't growing as fast as it could, just in terms of the masses. And I think that there's a number of reasons that's happening. But that's what I want to see, is that while we're continuing to make the good players better and getting really, really top notch high end players, we need to make sure that we're also growing the game at the base, and introducing the sport to more and more, individual kids, more and more communities, more and more schools, more and more neighborhoods. And just growing the ranks of overall lacrosse players, in addition to those kids, you know, that you'll see playing on Saturday afternoons in Maryland and Virginia and Hopkins uniforms in the future.
Now, what's your favorite thing? Obviously, the player development side is always, you know, so much fun from a coaching ranks and from in an area like Florida, as you mentioned, making those players get better and sort of have that goal to be, you know, a next star in the college ranks, and whether it be D1, T2, D3, or even club ranks. But, you know, down in Florida, who's impressed you the most in the high school ranks, whether it's teams or maybe some coaches, coach, that have either reached out to you, that have been working with? What's impressed you the most?
Well, you mentioned coaches. My first two games with Bowles, we played Vero Beach and St. Andrews, and so I was immediately impressed by the two guys I coached against, because Vero Beach is being coached by Rick McCarthy, who's a Yale alum who coached several Division III teams in the Northeast, and is just a fantastic coach. And then St. Andrews, I coached against Tony Seaman, which I think anyone that knows across knows who Tony Seaman is, former coach at Hopkins and at Towson. So they're starting to become some really, really good coaches, down here. And I think, Seaman's a great example of someone who's looked at it as an opportunity that he spends, you know, 5-6 months down here in Florida during the winter, which was particularly bad this year in the Northeast. So he's down here coaching up some high school kids and then goes back north, you know, for the spring and summer. I think we'll see more and more of that, happening, and schools are working to attract those guys down here, which is great, because we all know that good coaching is the key. You know, that having good coaches who understand the game, understand the kids, are excited about teaching it is huge. In terms of individual talent, this is starting to become, you know, watching the games, you know, top to bottom, I think some of the rosters here are not quite the same as some of the ones in the Northeast, but those top end kids, I mean, these kids down here can play. I mean, I have a kid on my team, Anthony Teixeira, who's going up to Cornell to play for Coach Kerwick. And he's as good as anybody. This kid can just flat out play the game. He plays hard. He's aggressive. He's got a great stick.
And there's kids like that spattered across, you know, every roster down here in Florida. And it's a lot of fun to watch these outstanding kids just come out. And it comes from, you know, playing at the high schools, but also playing for club teams and keeping their sticks in their hands, you know, throughout the year so that they're able to compete with the kids in the Northeast who ultimately still have a little bit of an advantage, I think, over kids in the South in terms of development.
Well, and that's all you need, right? Coach Sokot is one player who could sort of open those gates and sort of breaks through that wall that allows, you know, younger players to see and say, you know, if I put that work in, if I put the effort that he did, you know, maybe I will have that opportunity to play there. And as you said, you know, it's exposure is important, but having the right coaches to get these players, you know, ready for that next level. And you know, I'm sure absolutely, those kids are fortunate enough to have you and, Coach McCartney and Tony Seaman and I'm sure a number of other, coaches in Florida. It's a massive state. You know, you're just in that little pocket there in Jacksonville, but, there is portions of lacrosse sprouting all over the place, down there and, you know, kind of, looking at not just Florida, Coach Sokot, but, you know, you've really kind of been ingrained yourself down sort of in the Southeast, over the past, you know, 5 or so years. What are some of the trends or maybe the differences that you've experienced, over these past 5 years and not maybe with the players, but also with the coaching or just overall with the sport? You know,
it's what I see as the biggest difference between lacrosse in the Northeast. You know, let's look at the entire Northeast as a hotbed, right? And we know there's pockets where it's not huge, but if you just look at the way lacrosse is treated in the Northeast versus in the South, I think that's where the biggest difference is the way the rest of the community views the sport. If you go to John Jay High School in New York or West Genesee High School in upstate New York or New Canaan High School in Connecticut or Lincoln Sudbury in Massachusetts or, you know, any of those schools that have traditionally strong lacrosse programs and really communities all over the Northeast, lacrosse is treated as an important sport in the school, a key sport, a path to playing in college, and it's really in the communities on par with football or basketball. And the lacrosse player takes just as much pride and the community views him in the same way they do the football players. And that's a huge difference in the South. Generally, lacrosse is viewed as this little side niche thing. And it's not football. It's not basketball. And it's not baseball. And it's interesting the effect that has, I think, on athletes' approach to the game. So right now, an athlete really needs to have a very strong, motivating, committed coach to keep him engaged, but also a strong, strong personal commitment to the game and wanting to be good at it to find success, because he's not necessarily going to get that same level of support and encouragement from his community that, hey, this is important what you're doing. He has to feel it himself or herself really as well, in order to get there. And it creates an interesting dynamic. And it's something I've seen very quickly at the Bowl School, which has a fantastic football tradition. I mean, they play in the Florida State Championship game almost every year. I have a kid that's my face-off guy and becoming a pretty good midfielder. He was the first team All-State middle linebacker as a junior in high school this year. First team All-State middle linebacker in the state of Florida. And the kid's a stud, absolute stud. And he's just starting to, I think, gain respect for himself as a lacrosse player and recognize that, wow, this game tests me just as much athletically as football does in some different ways, but it's just as challenging for me. And I care just as much about being a great lacrosse player as I do being a great football player. And making that leap with individual kids and then also with teams to view themselves as important as lacrosse players and committed to it, is a huge step. It's just starting to happen here in Florida. I've seen it happen out in Portland, Oregon. I watched it happen over the time I spent there. It literally took place over the time I spent there where lacrosse became an important sport to kids and to the communities. And it's really starting to happen in Florida as well.
That's awesome. And I could say, Coach, it's happened here in my backyard, you know, having You know, one of my star junior midfielders, Brian Costabile, heading to Notre Dame. He is our starting quarterback at Mount St. Joe. His running back and a linebacker is also in his literally second year playing lacrosse. He's a D-middy for us. He is a grinder. He, you know, has figured out, like you had mentioned, and really I think it took a couple teammates and even myself to convince him that lacrosse is only going to help him play football in college. And that's where he's going to go. He's going to play college football somewhere. But the fact that he can strap it up every day in the spring, play a sport that's so athletic, it's so versatile, it's great for him, particularly talking about a running back and a linebacker. I mean, talk of, in a role that he's in, it has to make him better. And he's seeing that. And like to your point, once they do see that, it's great. And I think your comment about the way the sport's treated, if these kids are treated just as they were on a football field, on a lacrosse field, you'd probably see a dozen more kids step up and continue to put the harder work in, right?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. And we're further behind down here. You know, we're just at the phase where it's starting to get the football coaches aren't outwardly bashing lacrosse.
Right.
You know, I think they're just starting to realize that, hey, this is actually a pretty cool game. This is a man's game. These guys are out there beating the heck out of each other, super athletic. This is a man's game we're watching out there. And two, recognizing that, you know, this game is not a threat to my sport. You know, I don't have to lose kids to lacrosse. I can have my kids play lacrosse and get them back for spring football as better athletes than they were when they left me at the end of the fall.
Spot on, coach. And I even work very close with the head football coach, in my recruiting ranks. Because, you know, I want to know what athletes he's looking at, and there could be some cross sport there. And what's better than a multi-sport athlete playing, like you said, you know, fall football, you know, gears him up, get ready to play spring. And like you said, whether it's, he's a big football player and he loves to play lacrosse or vice versa, they still have that, you know, sort of time where they can get, you know, the time and space and still focus on academics, of course. But as we all know, athletes, I feel, you know, student athletes, we've done such a better job now really putting that forward and kids really understanding how important their education is. I'm happy that you mentioned the fact that there is such a great, you know, growing trend down there of getting more sort of visibility and positivity around the game of lacrosse. So, let's switch speeds because I think, and just in a little bit of a ranks, just because, you know, we're talking about high school lacrosse, the dynamics of high school lacrosse down in Florida. But I also want to kind of flip it a little bit about sort of the club lacrosse world and talk about just because you are in my mind, a very unique situation. You've been involved in the club world. You've helped grow it and foster it. And I think it's such an important piece, particularly in areas outside of the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. For kids to travel and really why it started back in the day. It was an opportunity for kids to be able to travel to different parts of the country, you know, as all-star groups. But the question I really want to throw at you is, you know, the club lacrosse world versus the high school lacrosse world and you living and having both hats. What are some things that you see, coach, you know, being on both sides of the ball, whether it's good or whether it's bad? This, you know, high school versus club lacrosse.
I think it's very different depending on where you live in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then within the region in the country is what high school you play for. So if you grew up playing lacrosse in Long Island, odds are your high school coach was a college All-American. He played the game since he was 3 years old, knows the game inside and out, has probably watched 400, 500 lacrosse games in his life. And no matter what high school you play for in Long Island, you're getting pretty good coaching, right? And you may not agree with the guy's philosophy or approach, but he knows the game. And that's just not the case all over the country. And I was, before coming here, I was in Georgia for a few years, and there's literally teams that have a football assistant football coach who's just stepped up to coach the lacrosse team to help them. But he's literally learned about lacrosse in a book and maybe watched, you know, a couple games on YouTube, and that's his basis for coaching the team. And so if you consider that as what the guy has at the high school level, you all of a sudden recognize that a club team like LB3 in Georgia that during the summer takes these kids and has them coached by college athletes and former college and high school coaches and All-Americans and guys that know the game, you start to realize that the club season could be very important to these kids. And it's a little different than comparing upstate New York or New England or Long Island or Philly or Baltimore, where if you play for St. Paul's, you could get recruited and go to college and become a great player without ever playing club lacrosse. And that's just not the case at most schools in the South. Your best lacrosse is played during the summer. Your best coaching often comes during the summer. And your opportunity to be seen is during the summer. And that's just the way it is. So the club teams down here are hugely important. And there's tons of players who all spring long during their season are just looking forward to the summer, because that's when they're going to get tested. That's when they're going to compete at a high level. And that's when they're going to get to play lacrosse in a way that looks much more like what they see when they watch it on TV. So I think it's very understandable that the club season does become hugely important. That being said, I do believe in the high school season. I think it's important that we as the club operators never infringe upon that. That we don't want to become soccer, where kids are making choices about playing for their high school or playing for their club. Every kid that plays lacrosse during the spring season should play for their high school. That should never go away. I think it's great for the game to develop those rivalries and that sense of competition. But I also think that everyone has to recognize that the clubs are fulfilling a very, very important role as well, both in the recruiting scene, which is what everybody talks about, really important down in the South in the educational side. What we look at during the summer is just a time when you can just focus on getting better. At LB3, we do nothing about team, basically, other than just core principles and lacrosse IQ stuff. It's all about individual player development during the summer. And then when they go back to their high school team in the spring, the coach is going to try to win games. Right? He's trying to win games for the high school. He's working on complicated rides and clears and man-up plays and putting together an offense that highlights their best players. During the summer, we're able to take a different approach where we say, winning or losing the game isn't that important. What's important is that all of you get better as individual players and learn to play the game. That's what we focus on in the club season, which is huge for the development of the game back. It's just critically important for these kids to be able to get better like that because, they're not all starting and picking up sticks when they're 3 years old. Often they're in eighth grade, but the first time they pick up a stick, so they have a lot of catching up to do in terms of skills development.
Now, do you think, Coach, that because when, talking my own experience, working with my high school team, you mentioned, sort of the team philosophies, the riding and clearing side of the ball, the face-off play, how you're working your wing play, even from little things of, man up, man down, clears and ride, just the whole nature of the larger beast, right? Obviously, when you have your high school team each day in and day out, it's easier to sort of build off that plan and instill that. As you mentioned, from the club ranks, it's easier to then focus more on individual development. When you coach your club program and when you get involved with kids that are fully working on their individual development, do you see a lack in any of the team side of the ball things, the clearing, the riding? Is there a lack of education and knowledge, from that realm, wing play, or is it more sort of a roll the ball out mentality in the club ranks? Or, is it, these athletes really just kind of adapting and really kind of sort of to a degree of a pickup street league kind of thing?
No, I don't think so. I think that, if I was to take, I'm going to use some old, let's use current, but let's say I took Casey Powell and Donowski and Pinnell and put them in a pack and put Berger, Rabel, and give me another mini.
Silcott.
Right, Silcott at the midfield, right? And put us out on the field without any instruction about what offense we're running. Didn't even tell those six guys what set to get into. And put a ball out there against a good defense, we would immediately start playing offense. And we would play offense, and it would look to a semi-trained eye like we were playing a set offense because we all understand fundamental rules of the game. But you know that if I square up on my defenseman and split dodge to my right and I'm carrying hard at you, you know to get out of the way. Right? You're just automatically going to do that. You're either going to clear or you're gonna push to the back side to force your defenseman to make a decision that either he's gonna help on me or he's gonna clear out of the way with you as you make your movement. And now that's not teaching offense. That's not teaching a offense. That's teaching kids how to play offense to get kids to understand some of those basic rules about what you do on the field. So the way we teach our kids is all about reacting to each other. And all about how you move in different situations, how you respond, how you find the open guy, where you go after you pass the ball, how you do all those things. So then in the end, when they go back to their high school team or they move on to college and they're being taught an offense, whatever specific offense they're taught, odds are it's based on those principles somehow. It's based on those principles. So what we do is we work really hard to teach the kids the skills, but also the IQ in terms of how you respond on the field. And now whether their coach puts them in a 1-4-1 and has them power dodging from up top or puts them in a 1-3-2 and is working more on motion and flow, it really doesn't matter because your responses to what everyone else does are kind of fundamental rules of our game. And in the end, when you get the ball, you have to be able to run hard with the ball in your hand. You have to be able to get that ball out of your stick quickly. You have to be able to shoot accurately. You have to be able to do those things to survive in any offense. So we commit our time during the summer to developing those things. And all those kids go back to their individual high school, and the skills they learn during the season are going to translate to whatever offense they play. And that's kind of our philosophy. And we believe that when the kids get really, really good at those skills and at understanding those concepts, those things we call lacrosse IQ, they're playing an offense even though we don't give them one to play. They're literally playing an offense based on rules and principles of the game, even though we're not saying, okay, we're in a 1-3-2 and this is our pattern. You go here, or he goes there, you cut there, and this is what we're doing, and we're trying to get our biggest, fastest middie asleep for a goal. And we don't take that approach at our level, though. It's all about everybody being able to do all those rules, learning all the rules, and it may not be the biggest, fastest kid to get this ball every time. It's the right kid at the right time gets the ball every time. Take his job.
I mean, that's bottom line. A lot of it has to do too with the coaching philosophy. And I think sometimes, you know, the things that tend to maybe hurt that player is, you know, when he does get a certain side of coaching that he may get, let's say with LB3, and then maybe goes back to his high school, he may feel, you know, shorted, or he's not sort of on that same page as those players. And that's where that frustration comes in. I think a key thing to that, though, is the clubs and the high schools being more dialed in, and really particularly the coaches, you know, working together to better themselves and not making it such a competitive side. And I don't think I see too much of that from the coaching ranks. I think that's where we, as the big ambassadors of the game, need to instill that basic fundamental coaching philosophy that you're talking about, Coach Silcott, and it really can trickle down to players at all levels, skill.
That's the key, Birch. It has to go down. It has to move down to the youth level at the base, at the beginning level,
all over the country, where we're teaching the skills. You know, that we're not taking, we kind of took a leap here at a high school club, but this is where what it really all comes down to, though, is those things should be taught to kids when they're U11, U13, and U15 players. And the environment that they're playing in should be about them getting better as players and having fun. And yeah, it's going to be competitive. We play a competitive game, you keep score, but the competitiveness and the drive to win games should not drive the way your training and your practice and your curriculum is set up. Your U13 curriculum for kids in your rec league should not be devised to try to win as many games as you can. It should be set up to try to produce as many lacrosse players as you can. Kids that love to play and the kids that have the core skills to be able to play. That should be the goal of every U13 program in the country. And the way I see it, one of the fundamental problems we have is that the goal of too many U13 rec teams around the country is to win their game. Right? And so if I'm coaching a U13 team and I have Steven Berger on my team and my goal is to win games, guess what? Steven Berger's getting the ball every time we're on offense. Every single time. He's getting the ball and we're doing something to try to get him a shot. And I could finish the season 13-0. Steven Berger averages 8 goals a game. And I look like, in my local community, like, wow, I'm the best youth lacrosse coach. I went 18-0. I'm the best player in the league. I'm beating everybody. But the problem is I have Steven Berger and I have 10 other kids who can barely catch and throw, because what they do is stand around and watch Steven Berger play lacrosse.
You have 19, coach. You have 19 other players that are, right, have lacked, you know, you're spot on, and have lacked not just, you know, learning how to play the game, you know, from an individual, catching, throwing, scooping, but like you had said before, just from a bottom line team mentality, where do I cut through? How do I cut? How do I set picks? How do I play on ball defense? And if I'm not on ball defense, what am I doing backside? You know, and you're right. That has to be drilled in at the core roots. And I think you and I, and I think many players at particularly the highest level had youth coaches that drilled that into their head and really allowed them to learn that game from that perspective. And then they adapted their own style to the fundamentals of the sport. So yeah, coach, this is spot on. I'm here with Coach Brian Silcott on the IL Preps podcast, week 3, and we're running down a number of great topics, from the growth of the game in the Southeast to where it's gone, to club versus high school, and really focused on sort of this player development piece and how it's allowed sort of Coach Silcott and his group, LB3, influence and inspire kids to play this style of game and teach this style of the game. Coach, I want to take a quick, you know, turn and sort of run down we kind of talked about youth lacrosse briefly, and I kind of want to stay within the high school ranks, but this is more focused on the rules of the game, right? Our sport has 3 rule books. And you and I actually, ironically, were the leaders of establishing one of those rule books, which is still, I don't think, an actual rule book. But, you know, we have youth rules that are designated for youth play, meaning U15 and below. We have high school national federation rules, for high school lacrosse scholastically. And then we have NCAA, which are for our college ranked players, our college programs, but we're also seeing high school conferences, one that I play in the Baltimore region that plays by NCAA rules. You also see tournaments nationally throughout the summer that are playing NCAA rules. You know, bottom line, coach, is this a good thing for our sport to have 3 sets of rules? And, you know, it's kind of a hard thing to drill down to, but if you were to look at specifically what we're doing at the youth level, does that help our sport, and do we need to make larger improvements, more, do more things for the rules to allow kids to play the game at an earlier level, have more fun with it, understand it, and then be able to grow fundamentally from it?
So, so first, and I think it's easy to say it's ridiculous that we have three sets of rules, but the reality is that some of the rules need to be different. I mean, it absolutely has to be. You know, there has to be things that are different. You know, a U9 kid is much different than a 22-year-old guy playing as a senior in college. And with that comes things that need to be different in the rules. And I think that, you know, there's a spectrum of things that create that situation. But then there's also simple things that there's no reason for them to be different that we make different. And it's always one group catching up to the other. So I could take the face-off. You know, why the heck can't there just be one way to do a face-off? And that's the way we do it. So that when a, you know, if a team from, was one of the first things I heard from the folks at Macaulay School in Tennessee, went up and played a couple of MIA schools. And in the first game, one of the big problems they had is their face-off guy had never hadn't faced off with college rules before. And here is in the middle of his high school season, and all of a sudden, he's getting down to fight for the ball under a different set of rules than he's played the previous, you know, 6 weeks or whatever that he's been playing. And that's just silly. There's no reason to have two different ways of guys crouching on the ground and wrestling over a rubber object. Right?
I experienced that here, Coach. You know, we play MIA, and we play NCAA rules for MIAA play.
Right.
Obviously, the public schools in Maryland don't. They play Federation. And when we play those Federation teams, yeah, you know, it's a learning curve. And it's,
right,
you're right. It's kind of, it's silly in certain facets, particularly the face-off.
Right.
Yeah. Clearing, maybe another one, Coach, right? 30 seconds, what's the difference between 20 and 10 and a full 30? Right.
I've been trying to figure that out forever. Why we need two different ones?
It doesn't,
that.
And you know what?
It's 30 seconds either way, 20 or 10 or 30.
And you know who who's more confused than anyone, Coach? Who do you think?
Officials.
Yeah.
The officials.
And and they're the ones that need to be more, you know, dialed in.
Right.
I expect my players most of the time to not know the rules. You know, I have to put rule books in their lockers and I send out memos about new things, but it makes it harder for them, which makes it, you know, more challenging for the game to have good flow and safety or be the game that we've all played as players. So
putting that aside,
right,
putting aside the fact that there needs to be work to make the game more consistent and that we need to look for the things that can be the same and make sure that we come up with a consistent way of doing some certain things to keep the game as similar as possible. The other side of it is that particularly at the youth level, there have to be different rules. And I'm a proponent of small-sided play. If the U9, U11, even U13 kids on a small field with small numbers, and let's get rid of the full field 10v10 for little kids. It serves no purpose other than saying my kid is as close to being a college player as he can possibly be. And he's not a college player. And so when I look at a U11 group, let's take a real obvious one. Seeing U11 kids on the field, full field, the defenseman playing with 6 foot poles is one of the more absurd things I've ever seen in my life. It makes no sense whatsoever. And you and I dealt with this when we did the youth rules. We dealt with this, and the response and you and I both agree, right, that there should not be long poles in U11.
Right.
And just about everyone in the room when we were writing those rules and coming up with a new rule was pretty much okay. It's ridiculous that a U11 kid plays with a long pole. But we did not make the rule that you can't play with a long pole at U11 because U.S. lacrosse was afraid that there would be fascists around the country that wouldn't adopt the rules because they felt that their kid should be able to play with long poles. And to me, that's a huge failure on our governing body. So our governing body knows what's right for the game. They know what the best thing is for the game. And out of fear of losing some membership and thus dollars, they refuse to do what's best for the game and instead do what's best for business. That's a problem for me. And it's the wrong way for those decisions to be made. In my vision, U11 kids should be playing 7-on-7 at best, but should probably be playing more like 5v5 on a 50-by-30 field with 5-foot-by-5-foot goals. What an awesome game that would be. And if they're playing 5v5, now all of those kids are going up and down box style, so they're all learning to play offense and defense. They're all playing all the different positions because there's really only one position. You're a lacrosse player. They're all getting all the skills. There's one ball for 5 kids versus one ball for 10 kids, which means they're going to get more touches. They're going to be more involved in the game. And it also means that in a community, it's easier to create teams and easier to create leagues because you don't need as many kids. So now you're able to reduce the travel for these kids because if you only need 40 kids to make up 4 teams of 10 kids each that can now compete and be a league, those kids don't have to travel as far. Plus, you're reducing the price cost. They don't have to travel. You don't have to get all over the place. It's easier to play. They can get to a local field with 40 other kids and have a league. Every kid touches the ball more. They're forced to play all the different positions. They learn to play the game with a short stick in their hands no matter what position they play, so it's easier to learn to catch and throw. And I think this makes better players, and it increases the number of kids playing our game, which are really our two goals, right? Get more kids playing and teach them to play the game.
Spot
and
on.
The only argument I've ever heard against it is that, well, you know, they're going to develop and they can't. They got to eventually play on the full field. The sooner we get them doing it, the better off they're going to be. The sooner we get the long stick in their hands, the better they're going to be at playing defense for the long stick. And my only response to that I can come up with is that if that's the case, why do we have so much trouble with the Canadians? If our way of playing full field lacrosse from the time you're a little kid is the best way to learn the game, we should be beating the pants off Canadians because we have more players, better athletes, and we do it that way. So we should be crushing the Canadians every year, but we don't. And we can't. They grow up playing everyone with a short stick and playing 5v5. Every single kid. Some of those guys on the whole team don't pick up long poles literally until their college age.
I mean, Coach, you could also compare it to what other big governing bodies in the country, in the nation, have done. Soccer.
Right.
Short-sighted feel.
Yep.
Smaller goals. Basketball. They, you know, put nets, they lower the nets down so the kids aren't shooting on the 10-footer, right? And even hockey. I mean, hockey comparatively is probably something that you could look at. Kids are wearing equipment. You know, it's a little bit tougher to figure out how to skate and to handle the puck with the stick. But they go short-sighted. They have smaller goals. And it's obviously done great for kids in soccer, basketball, and hockey. Why are we so behind the curveball? And it's something I agree with you completely on that needs to be a larger focus. And if we want to, you know, we talk about how many great athletes are coming up in our sport, Brian. I mean, we talk about, you know, look at the high school rankings and the top players that we see throughout the spring and in the summer that are coming up the ranks. Think about how many more there would be if these kids at a younger level learned, like we had talked about, the fundamental ways to play the game. They got the right player development. They had great coaches that instilled this. And they played a game that was more fun. They got more touches. And they were able to experience from both offensively, in between the lines, and defensively.
Absolutely.
I think it would be a really big game changer and something that I agree with you on that needs to be addressed. And formally, there needs to be larger buy-in from the larger lacrosse community and not just necessarily, you know, one person saying this is the right way. I think there's a lot more people out there that would stand by this and would say, you know, yes, you know, this is important and we need to move forward on something like this. So.
And I think I think more and more people are starting to voice that opinion and we just need to start providing opportunities where that's the way we set up our local leagues. You know, if we're starting a new local league, why do you need to play the way that the youth leagues have been going in other places forever. Just start your own and do it that way.
Right.
It's really not that hard. Put less kids on the field. And the other side of it is field space, right? But if you have one soccer field and you're playing a full field of game on that, you get essentially 20 kids on the field at a time. If you play 3 5v5 games across the field instead, you get more kids able to play at a time on a single field. I mean, it's just
right.
It's simple math. It works better.
Right. That makes sense. I think that's yeah. I'm definitely interested to kind of keep this as a topic as I talk to more coaches nationally, Coach Silcott. Obviously, you and I being a little bit closer to this, and have a large and a strong feeling about it. But I'm definitely interested to hear, you know, what some other coaches nationally would say. So I'm going to make sure I keep this as a topic each week to sort of bring up and discuss the dynamic ranks.
Yeah.
As we kind of get ready to close out this week's podcast, Coach, one of the things I have to really ask you, and, you know, I went down your resume before, you've been involved in this sport at a very young age and really seen it, through your eyes. It's grown tremendously, from back when you were playing in high school to when you were coaching in the MLL, playing in the MLL even, and to now where you are coaching high school lacrosse players, down south. Coach, what's next for our sport? Where are we going? What in your mind, if there were 2 to 3 things that you could say we should watch out for, or what we should plan for, or maybe what we should do as a lacrosse community to continue to grow and to continue to make this sport, you know, the best thing, in our eyes for athletes?
Yeah, what's next? Obviously, I don't know what's next. I can tell you what I hope is next.
Perfect.
And what I hope is next is the movement at the youth level, to grow the game in a responsible way. You know, I think the growth of lacrosse, we've all been talking about the growth of lacrosse, and I think as lacrosse people, we take a great deal of pride in the fact that our sport's been the fastest growing sport in the country for 10 years straight or something like that. And that the game has just continued to grow and grow and grow. But the reality is we're still tiny, right? And there's so few lacrosse players compared to football and basketball and baseball and especially soccer. There's nowhere near the numbers, at those things. So the question is, how do we, A, continue to grow, and how do we ever really get to the point where lacrosse is on par with those other sports in terms of participation? Because if we, you know, we all think lacrosse is the best sport to play, so we obviously want lots of kids to play it. So what I hope to see, what I hope happens, kind of a twofold thing. One is that people like myself and like you and the folks that are running the club programs and the best high school programs and they're, you know, understand the game and have a position of, for lack of a better term, power in the game in their area, commit themselves not only to running their business and working with those high-end players and working to produce the next great Division III and Division I All-Americans, but also take a step back and make sure they dedicate a portion of their time, a portion of their efforts to actually growing the game. Right, taking a pretty good U15 kid and developing him into a first-team college All-American over a few years isn't growing the game. That's developing a player, which is a great thing. But it's not actually growing the game. Growing the game is getting new people to play lacrosse. And not getting one or two that happen to be your neighbors who you hand sticks to, but getting 1,000 or 2,000, right, in your area playing the game who didn't play before. So I would hope to see that kind of commitment out of the leaders of our game, not at a national level, but in a local level, leaders of our game, saying, I'm going to grow the game. I'm going 2 towns away and getting lacrosse going. I'm going over here and getting lacrosse going. Whether the opportunities aren't as big for that in the Northeast, there's still tons of towns in Maine, New Hampshire, Western New York, the West End of Long Island, but people just aren't, Western Maryland, where they're not playing lacrosse. With that, what I would like to see is folks deciding that the best way to do that is with ball-sided play, ball-sided local play. when you're starting in a new community, the goal is not as quickly as possible to get a tournament team together, travel 400 miles to compete in the tournament. When you're doing that, the goal is to get kids on the field with the ball on the stick. That's the goal. And that's the way I think to deal with this, the small side is play, everybody with a short stick, with coaches committed to making the program a success, not their team, but the whole program a success. The coaches are working together, teach these kids the game, and the competitive games are for the kids to compete, not for the coaches to compete. So the coaches to educate, for the kids to compete. And so these programs are set up with the goal of growing the game, teaching the kids the game, and yeah, the kids are going to go out and try to knock each other's heads off out on the field. That's what we love about the sport. But the coaches don't need to get engaged with that at the youth level. The coaches should be all about teaching them to play small-sided, everyone get touches, teaching fundamental skills, fundamental lacrosse IQ, teaching them to play rather than teaching them plays.
I love it, Coach. I could sit here and talk to you for another hour if it was up to me. Again, folks, I am here with Coach Brian Silcott, head coach of the Bowles School. Is that how you say it, Coach? The Bowles School in Jacksonville,
Bowles.
Florida?
Bowles, yep.
Bowles, yep. Bowles. Coach is also the CFO of LB3 Lacrosse, director of LB3 Jacksonville. Again, as I mentioned earlier, really a great friend and someone who I look up to from a coaching ranks, particularly now. Brian, it's really been a pleasure. I appreciate everything that you do for the game. I appreciate your time today and make sure that, we keep you tuned in and get you back on as a guest, in the near future.
Sounds good, bud. Great talking to you,
Bert. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, folks, thank you so much. Thanks to Brian Silcott for joining us. This will wrap up our week 3 of Inside Lacrosse IL Preps podcast. I'm Steven Berger. I'm signing out. Hope everyone has a great week. See you next time.
Inside Lacrosse podcast.